Welcome to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast. Every 2 weeks, we explore news and issues affecting hunters, anglers, and conservation across the northeastern United States. If you enjoy the content here, be sure to subscribe to our print or digital versions by calling 800-535-5191 or visit our website at outdoornews.com. Now, here's your host and a man who claims he's immune to buck fever, New York Outdoor News editor, Dan Ladd.
This episode of the Great Northeast Podcast is brought to you by the Family Forest Carbon Program, a collaborative initiative brought to you by two nonprofits, the American Forest Foundation and the Nature Conservancy, assisting landowners in improving the health of their land with long-term sustainable forest management practices while providing guaranteed annual income. Learn more at familyforestcarbon.org. Welcome to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. Happy to be along. Happy you're along for what is episode 55 of this podcast, and we hope it's a good one. Our special guest is going to be Eric Morkin. He's with our Outdoor News office out in Minnesota. We'll talk more about Eric briefly. First, we want to say goodbye to summer and hello to fall. That's right, September 22nd in the morning, I think around 10:30, somewhere around there, marks the occurrence of the fall equinox, and I couldn't be happier. It's been a long, hot summer, probably a little hotter than average, and actually lately, it's been more like summer than fall these last few weeks of summer. We've had a lot of warm weather, so from what I'm understanding, above average in many parts of the Northeast. So perhaps with the incoming fall, we'll have more outgoing summer conditions, but I guess we'll have to see about that. We can't control the weather. What we can control is we've got hunting seasons opening here in New York in the northern zone. We've got a grouse season that opens on September 20th, and archery season opens here in the northern zone on the 27th. October 1st is a big date in a lot of states. I know Connecticut, Vermont, and a few others have seasons that open October 1st here in New York. Our southern zone archery, northern zone wild turkey, and a whole bunch of small game seasons get going, including pheasant in most of the state. So a lot of happy folks out there getting ready to head afield. And if you're doing so, we ask you to be safe. We also ask you folks to send us your reader shots. Reader shots are pictures of you in the field with your fishing game. And you can do that very easily through our website, outdoornews.com. Just go on there, look for photo submissions, pick the state, in this case, New York, and tell us a little bit about yourself. The forum will ask you some questions, and you can get us your reader shots. We like to run them in the paper when we can, and we enjoy seeing your smiling faces and, of course, the success you're having afield. Our guest, Eric Morkin, again, he works out in the main office in Minnesota. Eric is an avid archer. He does some writing for us, but mostly he takes care of the OutdoorNews.com website and all of the platforms involved, the various states. Quite an undertaking for this guy who, again, does a lot of writing and does a lot of bow hunting, and we're going to be right back with more from Eric Morkin right after this.
Attention hunters, are you ready to take your hunting game to the next level? OutdoorNews.com is your ultimate hunting partner. Stay up to date with the latest hunting trends, gear reviews, and expert tips from seasoned hunters. OutdoorNews.com provides the most comprehensive hunting news to ensure you're always in compliance with local laws. Whether you're a seasoned pro or a beginner, OutdoorNews.com is for you. We're passionate about preserving our hunting heritage and fostering responsible hunting practices. OutdoorNews.com, where hunters become legends.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. And as I said before, we've got one of our own with us. We've got Eric Morkin, who is in our main office out in Plymouth, Minnesota, St. Paul, Minneapolis region. And he's quite the bow hunter, and he also wears a lot of hats with our organization, and I'm going to let him tell you all about that. Eric, I want to make you welcome, and thank you for joining us on the podcast here. It's great to have you, man.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting with you today.
So how long have you been with Outdoor News now? It's been at least a year or so, right?
Yeah, a little over a couple years.
Oh, boy.
It'll be coming up on a couple of years here this November, actually. I'm sorry. I started, I believe it was in November period of 2022. So
just as we were getting that, getting ahead of that new website rollout at the beginning of 2023.
Yep.
That's right. Okay. Let's go back. Tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, and how you came to Outdoor News.
Yeah, I grew up in southwestern Minnesota. I've spent my whole life living in Minnesota outside of my 4 years of college, where I went to Augustana College, now in Augustana University in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So after that, I ended up moving to West Central Minnesota, and I studied journalism in college and ended up getting a job at a newspaper in West Central Minnesota. And I was there for quite a while. And I was dabbling in some outdoor stuff when it came to writing and things like that. I was doing a little freelancing on the side as well, with some outdoor stuff, mainly bow hunting, whitetail stuff. And that was just always my passion. So when the opportunity arose to come to Outdoor News and work as the web editor here as we launched this new website, it just was an opportunity I couldn't pass up and everything. And it's been an awesome transition. I love what we do at Outdoor News. I work a lot with the website. Goal is to kind of make it as good of a reader experience as you can have when you come to our website and everything, and build those stories and everything. I get to do, quite a bit of writing and stuff as well. Mostly ends up being a lot of hunting related, bow hunting stuff and everything. So,
yeah, I can tell just from your writings, you've got a very strong bow hunting background, and I want to get into that a little bit later. When you think about our website, outdoornews.com, and of course, all the sub pages that go for each state, including ours here in New York, how challenging is that to just keep up with, you know, six editors, guys like me, seven, actually, if you maybe more when you consider our publisher, Rob, and you've got a lot coming at you is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, there's a lot that we produce. It's really, you know, growing up in Minnesota, I always was, you know, very familiar with the Minnesota side of Outdoor News, and coming here and working for Outdoor News, really just showed me how well-versed Outdoor News is as a brand and everything, and just how deep our coverage goes when it comes to, you know, coming, you know, Minnesota, Wisconsin, you know, going all the way out east to you guys in New York and everything. It's been really cool for me because I get to see the content that comes through throughout our entire company. So I feel like I'm actually more well-versed of an outdoorsman now because I understand how things are different from the Midwest here in Minnesota to, you know, what's going on out east in Pennsylvania and New York and places like that. There's definitely, it's been eye-opening to see exactly what we all do produce and everything. And it's been a good experience for me. I feel like, when I'm posting these stories, I have to make sure I understand, you know, exactly what they're about for readers and everything, so I can categorize everything correctly and all that. So it helps me learn a lot about the outdoors when it comes to, like I said, this entire Great Lakes region and everything. So
I can relate to that. I mean, when I came on as an editor here in 2020, before then I worked for a media company full time, but I basically had a real good part-time writing gig. And I also was pretty diverse with that just by the nature of it, as well as somewhat of my own doing. But what I'm getting at is, you know, I'm primarily a deer hunter, I'm a little bit of a fisherman. And now, you know, I'm handling material from trappers. I'm handling material, a lot of stuff about guns, which I love, like Ron Spomer's stuff. And, waterfowl and pheasants, and seeing how it's a big deal, or I should say in some ways a bigger deal to the west of us, say in your state, as it is here, even though pheasant hunting is pretty big here, as we've found out with our own issues that we've had here in New York. But and so is waterfowling. I mean, and that's what I've learned, is how there really is a dedicated lot to just about every discipline that you can think of. And even take trappers, for example. I mean, there's guys who are real strong beaver or raccoon trappers, others who solely trap fisher and things like that, you know, so you really pick up on the nuances of the different things. So do you, let me ask you this. What is your web background? I mean, do you have some training in that? You obviously must have.
Yeah, my prior job, I mean, I was kind of in one of those positions where you're kind of a jack of all trades, where my responsibilities were, I was writing a ton, but I was also like uploading my own stories and everything like that, and building my own stories for the website. my role back then was like sports and outdoor editor. So I was covering a lot of nights and weekends where I was basically the only person on staff that was out and about at that time of day doing stuff. So I was going to like events and turning stories immediately that night. So, you know, just over the course of that experience, I learned how to, build stories, things like that, and do that side of things on my own and everything. So, I had just, you know, over the course of years doing that, that's kind of my experience in that and everything, is just learning how to do all that stuff on the back end when it comes to getting stories on the website and stuff. So
you went to college, you said, in South Dakota?
Yep, that's correct.
Sioux Falls. Did you go to college so you could hunt in South Dakota, or do you hunt in South Dakota because you went to college there?
Sioux Falls is about 2 hours from where I grew up, and the college itself is kind of what brought me there. But that was definitely a nice perk, having the ability to get in-state, especially pheasant hunting licenses. So I grew up in the heart of pheasant range in Minnesota. So I love to pheasant hunt as well. I've had dogs, you know, that I've hunted behind for much of my life after I got to be about a teenager. And that was pretty awesome to be able to, you know, buy in-state licenses. Because, you know, in South Dakota, as a non-resident, when it comes to pheasants, you get 2 5-day periods as a non-resident. So you're basically, you know, you're limited to hunting those 10 days throughout the course of a season. So yeah, being a in-state student and everything, and the ability to hunt pheasants out there in, you know, what's obviously known as probably the best state in the country to hunt pheasants in was a pretty nice perk.
I should say the pheasants are getting a lot of attention here in New York. In fact, we're going to have a story coming up, hopefully in the next issue. We have one pheasant rearing farm here in New York, and you may recall through mm-hmm. posting the stories that it got hit with the avian flu last yep. year, and that was devastating. I mean, it was on many fronts, not just we lost the birds, obviously, but you know, when I interviewed some of the folks with RDEC, in fact, I had them on this podcast. You could just hear how disappointing it was for them. It was sad, you know, it was mm-hmm. really sad. And it's sad today that our wildlife is subject to something like that, that can just, you know, decimate our entire flock of pheasants. We were able to secure some out of state, mainly Pennsylvania, from private breeders, but it was definitely expensive. And, but we did have pheasants last year, and things are looking a little bit better this year, but I've also realized that although we have a pretty strong pheasant hunting community here in New York, I really see how big of a deal it is out where you're talking about. I mean, I see that mm-hmm. when looking through the other editions of Outdoor News, and that's one of the things that I've learned. So do you still return there to pheasant hunt as well as bow hunt? I mean, the deer hunting must be pretty good over there too.
Yeah, it is. I bow hunt both the Dakotas and Minnesota. So I've got like 3 tags right now for bow hunting and everything. And I usually leave a season wishing at some point that maybe I should have done more pheasant hunting than I did, but it's so hard for me when I've got any deer tag in my pocket, because I just love bow hunting so much to get out of the tree essentially. But what I love going out to South Dakota late season. A lot of times their season runs into a good portion of January. And by that time, a lot of people are thinking about ice fishing and things like that. And I've just have had luck, you know, going out to South Dakota on, you know, in areas where you have kind of these cattail sloughs in amongst farmland and everything, and just kind of knocking on doors and seeing if we can do some hunting out there. So I usually go out there with 2-3 friends or something like that and spend a chunk of January chasing birds out there. And I've got a black lab, you know, so he's pretty well equipped to handle what can be pretty rough conditions out there at that time of year, you know, a bigger built dog like that and everything. So he does a good job in hunting in those cold conditions and everything. So that's kind of the time period where I end up finding myself out in South Dakota when it comes to pheasant hunting. But yeah, I was out there for South Dakota opener or second week in September here. So they opened up on the 1st, I believe, this year for bow hunting. I was out there that following weekend for just a couple of days, and I'll be back out there again as we get later into October and November if need be. So
no luck yet. What was it like out there? Was it pretty warm?
Yeah, it was hot in South Dakota. North Dakota opener the prior weekend was about as beautiful as you could get when it comes to weather. I haven't filled a tag yet. I've had some good hunts. I'm not going to use, so we get one tag as a non-resident out in those states. So I have a lot of good doe opportunities in Minnesota with bonus tags. So I hold off on shooting any does or anything like that when I'm out in these trips to different states and everything. And in North Dakota, I had a great buck that I spotted night before the opener. He was huge. And I was glassing him from over half a mile away, just kind of watching him. And he was just going through a summer pattern thing where he just didn't seem to have a care in the world. He was out there with about 7-8 more deer and just on the edge of a tree line coming off a river system. And he was out in a field. It was sugar beets and just kind of feeding his way along the edge there. And he ended up traveling about 100 yards along that edge, probably just kind of slowly feeding his way along and moving. So I slipped in the next day and I never ended up seeing that deer in the stand. And I kind of on the Sunday morning, so my second morning, hunting out there, I ended up having what, was a nice buck slip in on me. I'd found a bed a couple of years prior and I took my kayak in up a river and, bank that on the shore there and just climb up over the bank. And I've got about 15 feet to get to my tree overlooking that bed. And about 2 hours after daylight, he slipped right in on me. And it was a good deer, but I don't like my season. It would, for me to actually release an arrow on opening weekend, a lot of times it would take just a no doubter deer for me. So I ended up passing that deer, but that was a really fun encounter to, see a deer slip in like that. He bedded down in front of me at 20 yards for about 2 hours. And you get to learn a lot when you see things like that, watching how he moved in, watching how he bedded down, watching how he gets on his feet and then just kind of naturally browses away and stuff. And then probably beds down another 40, 50 yards out of sight and stuff. So that was a really fun encounter and everything. So it's been a good start to the season here, but it's been so hot for Minnesota. Minnesota just opened too, and it's been just so hot. And that kind of makes you think about how when you have time to, I butcher all my own deer and everything. So I ended up passing on a doe with a doe tag in my pocket on opening morning of Minnesota season and stuff, just because it was going to be so hot. And I had some other commitments that would have made it hard to really work on getting that deer butchered in a timely manner and stuff. So
I hear you there. Sounds like you've already had a heck of a season. We're just getting underway here. Our northern zone, which is the Adirondack region, opens September 27th. And then the rest of the state opens October 1st. So for anyone listening out there, checking out what Eric has to say, that should get you pumped up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Eric, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with more from Eric Morkin from Outdoor News right after this.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Vermont, Massachusetts, or New York, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
There's a great program available for youth who love to hunt and fish. It's called the Outdoor News Junior Pro Team, and any youth 18 or under can join for free at jrproteam.com. JPT program showcases useful videos and tips to help encourage the next generation to become stronger anglers and hunters. It's a platform to celebrate and inspire those outdoor loving youth. Check out the photos of Outdoor News Junior Pro Team members on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube, and visit our jrproteam.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, and we've got Eric Morkin here from our main office in Minnesota. He's been telling some deer stories already. He's been in the woods and in the fields doing some bow hunting in some of the Midwestern states where he can do that. But, Eric, bow hunting's bow hunting. And I don't care where we are. We're obviously up here in the Northeast, but I have a lot of friends that travel Ohio. I've got a good buddy that goes to either Iowa, Illinois, or Missouri or Kansas every year. And he's written a book about DIY hunts. But you were mentioning how you don't get to do so much small game hunting now because you're always in a tree stand. And, you know, I went through that right after college. I started bow hunting as soon as I got home from college and found myself doing less and less small game hunting because it is addicting. And I know that no matter what the temperature is on the 27th, I'm going to be in my tree stand that morning. It's there's just something about it. But let me ask you, you seem to be a lot more serious than myself. What is it about bow hunting? I mean, what is it?
So I grew up gun hunting in southwestern Minnesota, which were a lot of it's like there's not a ton of habitat down there. It's a lot of farm country where you have like kind of fragmented woodlots and things like that. And so we would spend a couple weekends in the woods basically. And I always loved deer hunting, but I just wanted more opportunity at it. So after I graduated from college, I got a bow my very first year, my very first fall after I had graduated, the prior spring. And I dived into bow hunting and I just fell in love with it. And I think as I look back on it now, like the biggest thing that it does for me is it provides me an opportunity kind of to have something to look forward to almost every day. Like I have in the winter, I have a little, it's just a target set up in my basement where I can go through shooting reps at 12 yards. It may just be a half an hour, but it's kind of fun to be able to go down and do something bow hunting related in my basement through January, February, things like that. I'm scouting all the time. It gives me an opportunity it gives me an excuse to get out into the woods at all different times of year and get out there and do that type of stuff. And then too, I think it's given me an appreciation for whitetails in general, just watching how they adjust from each portion of the season. I'm able to see how deer, react and do things in September and how different that is from late October into November, obviously, when we have the rut here in the Midwest. And then, you know, late season, once those deer have been pressured over and over and over again through bow hunting, gun seasons, muzzleloader, things like that. It's been so cool. And I've developed such an appreciation for whitetails in general from bow hunting. And I think that's why it bit me so hard is it's just, it's putting together pieces of the puzzle to try to get deer, throughout different portions of the season. And then honestly too, like I love venison. My whole family loves venison. We haven't bought red meat in, I don't know when the last time is we bought red meat. I try to shoot 4 or 5 deer a year. So our freezer is that's what we're eating. We eat venison oftentimes throughout the course of a year, 4 or 5 times a week and stuff. So it just all goes hand in hand. I just love everything about it. The opportunity it gives me to get out in the field and you know, the end result being the opportunity to have meat that I provide that feeds my wife and me and 2 kids and our extended family and everything. So
one of the things I often talk about with deer hunting in our state, we have pretty liberal seasons. I mean, I'm going to start deer hunting here September 27th and I'm going to go right through to the new year. And I presume you do the same, but do you do it all with a bow in your hand?
I do. Yeah. It's been many years since I've gun hunted. So when our Minnesota season, gun season opens up pretty early, well, very early, in November each year. This year, we actually are pretty fortunate because it opens up would be the second Saturday in November. And generally, it's that first Saturday in November. So you're just starting to see kind of that rut period a little bit start to trickle in. But I just love watching deer go about their natural movements. So usually what happens is I kind of time things with the gun seasons. And so when Minnesota's gun season opens up, I'll probably head out to South Dakota or one of the, you know, I also like to hunt Missouri and stuff too. I'm kind of eyeballing hunting Missouri this year a little bit too. And those seasons have a little bit later openers. So that's kind of how I do it. Yeah. I, even when gun season comes in. I know a lot of people love to bow hunt early and then they'll grab the gun and everything like that when those gun seasons come in. But there's just something about, being able to, it's the part of being able to shoot deer 20 yards and in, and when they're going about their natural movements and stuff, it just kind of bit me. And so I love that part of it and everything. And I end up just bow hunting throughout the course of the entire season.
Interesting. Interesting. Hey, we're going to take another quick break and we're going to be right back with more from Eric Morkin from Outdoor News right after this.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, and we've got one of our own with us here, Eric Morkin. And if you've been to OutdoorNews.com, whether it's the New York page or any of the other pages, he's the guy behind the scenes that's pulling the trigger here and making that happen. But when he's in the woods, he doesn't pull a trigger because he's always got a bowstring drawn back. And that's what we've been talking about, is the addiction and the dedication to bow hunting that guys like Eric have. So, Eric, let's talk about equipment. Not so much the equipment, why you have this bow over that bow, but what do you seek out in your equipment, so to speak? Whether it's through stabilizers, types of cams, types of bows, let off, that type of thing, because that's when folks start sitting around talking about what they use, I think it comes down to that more than a brand sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of funny you ask that, because I went through a period years ago where I went through terrible target panic. For many years, the first dozen years I bow hunted, I never lost a deer. And it's not because I'm some great shot or anything like that. It's because I've always been able to just kind of police myself and not taking bad shots. Like I turned down a lot of shots that just weren't the right shots and stuff over the course of years. And I always thought because of that, I would be immune to target panic, which was not at all the case. I went through about a 2-year stretch where I was turning down perfect shot opportunities by the end of that second year I went through it, because I knew what the end result was going to be. And that off season, I was shooting at that time a bow with a really aggressive cam system. I fell into the whole speed trap where, at that time, speed was the name of the game when it came to setups, arrows, shooting bows that were rated to be able to shoot the highest speeds and that type of thing. And I could even see it in my practice and stuff, just not getting the arrow flight. Once I really started to kind of dig into that type of stuff, I wasn't getting the arrow flight I wanted and everything. And it just was not a forgiving setup at all. And so that off season, after I had a bad experience to kind of end my one season, I believe it was 2019 season. I remember going into the bow shop here. I've got a great bow shop within an hour of me that I just love going in there and chatting with those guys, and I trust them a lot. And I told them, I said, I'm going to get a new bow. And I said, I do not care about speed. I said, let's talk about setup. I said, I don't care about speed. I said, all these bows shoot fast. I said, talk to me about how I can create the most forgiving setup. And so that was kind of the start of it. I ended up getting, I shot all these bows, and I wanted to find out what really fit me. What was the bow I could shoot with the right axle to axle that fit me well, where I didn't have to do a lot of maneuvering once I came to full draw. So there wasn't a lot of creeping that chin in or worrying about string angle and things like that. So this bow that actually I ended up getting, it's called a Bowtech Revolt X. It you can shoot it on what's called a comfort cam system. It has that deadlock cam system too, where you can actually adjust the cams with an Allen wrench and lock it in. And it's just so easy to tune that I can actually do it myself from home without a bow press or anything like that. Which is exactly what I ended up looking for. So the combination of that and then switching to a heavier arrow system, not like crazy heavy. Heavy is kind of in the eye of the beholder and stuff. I shoot at a little over 500 grain arrow, but my arrow is a little bit more high FOC. I just have really good arrow flight now. Because I decided, and I shoot both a front and a rear stabilizer on my hunting bow. And it just has created a situation where I have what I would consider like a really forgiving setup. So if I'm not perfect in that moment of truth, when it comes to my form, when it comes to little things like that, I still am getting great arrow flight, and part of that too, like I said, is I still police myself. I think the longest shot I've ever taken on a deer, is 32 yards. That was at a buck in North Dakota that slipped through on a far trail for me. And I ended up making a great shot on that deer. And he died really quickly and everything like that. But I do everything I can to make sure that if there's anything I can do to get those deer 20 yards and in, I'm doing it to try to make it so it's a good shot and a shot that I feel really confident in. So
it's amazing how things have changed in the archery world. I mean, I'm guessing I'm a little older than you are, and I started bow hunting in the early 90s. Actually, 1989 was the first year I bow hunted. But, you know, the era of overdraws came along. You mentioned the speed addiction and shorter arrows. And now things are getting back to heavier arrows. I mean, I can remember shooting with Thunderhead 125s when I first started on aluminum shaft arrows, Eastons. And then I got down to hundreds and I've been shooting them for a while, but I'm considering going back and I'm talking to a lot of people who are going heavier. So that's kind of a trend, as you mentioned. And then you also mentioned that you're shooting double stabilizers, both front and rear. And I don't know if you saw the article. I'm sure you did because you posted it, that Jared Villa wrote for us. Mm-hmm. Jared is one of our marketing folks and a writer for New York Outdoor News, and avid archer and a very serious sportsman and does well. And, we were at Huntstock this year, a festival over here in New York, and we started talking about that. He was showing them to me while we were on the range, and we both agreed that would make a good article, and that was how that article came to be. But I don't see a lot of people doing that. You know, what Jared and a few others that were there that day were some of the first folks I've seen do that. What turned you on to that, to the front and rear stabilizer?
It was because of what it was because when I went through target panic, it was because of how I always missed. I always missed low. I never, ever shot high. It was never like throwing an arrow over a deer's back or something like that. It was constantly shooting low, and it just became a pattern. And I just thought to myself, like, what is going on? And when I really started breaking it down and looking at what I was doing, I was anticipating that shot. So I was anticipating the arrow going off. And so my bow arm was dropping. My bow arm was dropping that split second before I actually released that arrow is what was going on. And so I thought, well, one, I need to get control mentally is the number one thing there that I needed to do, which I worked really hard to do. But two, that's when I really started looking into the advantage, because I just shot a front stabilizer at that time. Like a lot, you know, every hunters throw on like this, whatever, short front stabilizer and head out into the woods. That's kind of what I see a lot of hunters do, but the back bar thing is not something that I see a lot of hunters looking at. And I just thought, well, yeah, I've got this weight out front, but nothing out back to help balance that bow. And so it was just kind of leading into more situations where it was just aiding that bow to drop even more by just having a front stabilizer and that weight out front. So I really started messing around like with different weights, and this was years ago. So this was, you know, going into the 2020 season. I don't even remember exactly what my weights are out front and out back right now, because I, through that summer of 2000, going into the 2020 season, I just really messed around with different weights and that front length and that rear length and everything, and found something I like. And I've shot the exact same system ever since. I have, and it's been awesome. I, I love the way my bow is balanced because of it. I my pin float slowed down. I just feel more comfortable and like I just have a much more balanced bow in the woods. Which is like, it's kind of funny when you think about it. You hear about, people being worried about, running into problems where you're in a tree or something like that, and you're in your back bar or something is, your front bar, if it's too long, is hitting a tree or limiting the shots you're able to take. And I personally have never run into anything like that. It's been nothing but a positive for me in terms of throwing that back bar on and just creating a better balanced bow when I'm out in the woods.
Broadheads, expandables, or fixed blade?
Fixed. And I've shot a lot. And I want to say too that I have shot fixed blades that I did not like over the course of years. And so I don't think all fixed blades are necessarily created equal when it comes to arrow flight and things like that. That's why I always get a kick out of, like, because you hear that all the time, like expandables are fixed type of thing. And I always think to myself, well, I've shot some fixed blades I did not like. And I've shot some expandables that I did kind of like and that I didn't like. But what actually took me away from expandables, because that was what I had been using most recently before I went to a single bevel fixed head, is I would kill deer. But I butcher all my own deer, and I always examine them really closely, and I'm taking really close shots. So I understand like body angles of deer. How was that deer positioned to me? When I took the shot, and I have an idea of like, here's how that arrow should have exited, because that's how I'm shooting. Like, that's where I want my aim to be, is I want to think about where's that arrow going to exit, as I'm looking at the anatomy of the deer and everything. And I would always examine the deer, and sometimes it would go well, but there were just too many times where I was getting deflection. Even when killing deer fast, it was a 15 yard kind of gimme shot, where I placed the arrow where it needed to be, but I would see deflection when I would examine like where that arrow exited. I just thought like, gosh, what if I wouldn't have made a good shot, which can happen. I've been there, obviously. And I just thought to myself, there's gotta be a way. And so I kind of started going down the rabbit hole of looking into single bevels. And I think they become really much more popular even in the last 4 years since I started using them and everything. But I've used single bevels now for the last 4 years. And I started with kind of a smaller, cut single bevel that was good, really great arrow flight with it and everything like that, without bleeder blades. And then the following year, I decided to go with bleeder blades on that, which created, I think, better blood trails. It just opened up a little bit better hole for me. And now I'm shooting these wide single bevels with bleeders from Iron Will that they have, and that creates like just a really nice cut and every just kind of devastating wound channels that I've seen from them and everything. So I've really grown to trust single bevels in the last 4 years. It's just been, that's always something I've kind of monitored, is just like when I'm butchering my deer and stuff, like how did that arrow perform? And that broadhead performed kind of how I expected it to perform. So
that's pretty cool. And one last thing, let's touch on tree stands. What's your preference for tree stands? Do you use a variety of them? Are you a saddle guy or, climbers? What's your style there?
Definitely a saddle guy now. I went, oh, nice. When I first started getting into this mobile hunting thing, it was years and years ago, and I didn't have anything other than that like classic heavy hang on that you you put out each year and stuff and just leave. So I thought, well, I'll throw that on my back and I'll just use that. And so I did that for a couple seasons and realized that there's got to be a lighter way, and a less cumbersome way to do this and everything. So then I kind of graduated to one of those really light, small hang-on stands that I used for about a year or two. And then I just kind of decided to dive into saddles and everything, because they were just that much lighter. And I was intrigued by kind of the ability to get into different trees when it comes to different kind of leans and things like that. And so, yeah, I dove into them and I've just really grown to love saddle hunting. Once you start learning the little things about what makes for more comfortable sits, like the height of your tether, things like that, just little things that you can do to make saddle hunting even more comfortable. So I use, right now I'm using a two panel saddle that allows me to make kind of some more minor adjustments with the saddle itself. And, it's cool because a lot of times, you know, I'm setting up and I'm using that tree trunk to hide me until that deer comes through and I can get my shot opportunity and stuff. So, I'll have my bow in hand. A few years ago in North Dakota, I had a doe downwind of me. She came through with a buck on her tail and the buck was upwind of me. So he had no idea I was there. The doe got downwind of me 5 yards and halted and blew and blew and blew. And all the time I'm only 10, 12 feet off the ground, up in this tree. And I'm just kind of blending in with the tree. I've got my bow in my left hand there, just kind of at the ready. And I just kind of hunkered up against the tree and I'm just kind of watching out of the corner of my eye that buck that's about, you know, 7, 8 yards upwind of me. And he had no idea what was going on. That doe ended up blowing and blowing. She blew out of there and that buck stood there 7, 8 yards away from me. No idea I was there. I think in saddles, I just found that I've been able to blend in a little bit better. He obviously was cautious because he had no idea what she had just spotted or smelled. And after she blew out, he stood there for about another 5 minutes. And I was just, at that point, I'm pretty stiff and wanting to be able to move, but he ended up kind of letting his guard down. He put his head down and I just extended myself away from the tree with my feet and drew back. And, he took a few steps down the trail and there was a little opening and I ended up shooting that deer at about 12 yards after about a 15 minute process where he's 7, 8 yards away from me and I'm only 10, 12 feet up in the tree and stuff. And he had no idea it was there. So it's hunts like that really kind of made me a believer in what I could get away with in a saddle and everything. And I feel like it's just been right for my style of hunting and everything, which is, I just like to be as mobile as possible. And it's kind of allowed me to do that.
Well, Eric, it's been a pleasure having you on. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about bow hunting before we wrap this up?
Not necessarily. I just would encourage people to kind of get out, hunt how you want to hunt and stuff. Like, you know, we talked about some of the stuff that I do and stuff. If that's not for you, that's great. Hunt your own hunt and stuff. I'm a firm believer. I listen to a lot of whitetail media and things like that. And sometimes I feel like, you know, so much is talked about how you need to wait for certain conditions or, don't go out into the woods unless this is happening, you know, cold fronts coming, things like that. I've kind of grown to just try to enjoy being out in the woods as much as possible. So I get out under almost any conditions. Like you said, you're going to be in the woods on opener, regardless of the weather, I'm the same way. Like I don't look at what the weather is doing. I look at trying to find areas where I feel like deer are going to be comfortable on their feet in daylight. Try to get as close to those areas as possible. Use good access if you can to get into those areas. And I'm a firm believer that if you do that, if you understand where deer want to be on their feet in daylight and they feel comfortable and you kind of strategically plan out how to get in there and hunt those areas, I'm a firm believer that regardless of the conditions, regardless of the time of year, that you can give yourself a chance to shoot deer. So I would just encourage people to get out as much as they want and just have a great season. Have fun with it. I'm kind of hypocritical in saying this, but try not to stress about it. I know I stress about it a lot and wish that I didn't stress about it. I wish it was like turning off a switch or something like that. But, good luck to everybody out there this season. It's just such a fun time of year knowing that we got all these seasons opening up and, you know, a few months of deer hunting ahead of us. So,
well, Eric, it's been great having you on again. I appreciate you joining us. You've been listening to the Great Northeast Podcast for New York Outdoor News. I'm Dan Ladd.
Missed a past episode of the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast? You can find previous programs at outdoornews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platform. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover on this program, get yourself a subscription to Outdoor News. Simply call 800-535-5191 or visit us at outdoornews.com.
And don't forget to join us again here in 2 weeks to talk everything out of doors. Thanks for listening to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast.